You love the city? Were you born here? Have you seen it bloom like roses and then die and get cut back and then bloom again? Everywhere in the city of Chicago, plants are in bloom. It's still green. People are there. Can you forgive the city for what it's done to you and yours? Is it a place to avoid, all full of anger and violence? Or when you're out in the city, are you just looking around, looking behind you, waiting to get cracked with a club in your head? Or do you look forward to the lakefront and the people walking your dog, beautiful, along Lakeshore Drive and east of there along the lakefront, south, the festivals, Taste of Chicago, Lollapalooza, all the great things in this city, the Grant Park concert? I don't know. We're going to talk about it. Jeff Carlin is here. Jeff and I are going to talk about our love for the city and our hate for the city because it's a two-way street. It's not like Rich Daley, a one-way street. No, it's love and this hate thing. It's what happened. It's what is happening. Jeff is here, executive producer, WGN Radio, friend of Kat's, husband to the lovely Christine. And me, I'm John Cass, 40 years a columnist in this city, now running my own website, johncassnews.com, where you always get a good cup of common sense. So, do you love the city? We're going to talk about it on the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.
So this is a guy who lives high on the hog, and he has this Tammany Hall style attitude to power. And it's the Chicago Way, absolutely.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago Way.
The Chicago Way. That's the focus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Chicago Way. And it's Jeff Carlin and me. But today, I want to talk to you about a friend of mine. I don't know. His name is Eeyore. Eeyore Carlin. You ever hear of him? He's in the Winnie the Pooh books. He's the friend of Winnie the Pooh. But he's always sad and depressed. And Jeff has been something of an Eeyore lately. What is going on with you, my friend? What is happening with this Eeyore thing?
Well,
there he is. You hear the voice?
Yeah. It's hard to keep a positive spirit in the world, John. Sometimes, you know, it's things kind of pile up, and Memorial Day weekend, as we tape this, is always one of those times. Just in general,
I'm going to read you some news that should make you happy. Okay. Public transit. I'm just reading the headlines of from the newspaper that disgraced and embarrassed and tried to defame me. Public transit funding and pump and pension reform budget are Bears Stadium are big issues. Final week of a legislative session, as if anyone will read that. Soaring Chicago police lawsuit payouts hit record amount. More on their way. That's Jeff's favorite topic because we have to have lawyers get more money. This Chicago chef just won season 2 of Food Network's Last Chef Standing. But you know what? I know of a chef that could kick this guy's ass. And what about on this Memorial Day, especially remember the veterans of 21st century wars, because being lectured to by the Tribune is something that, you know, near and dear to your heart. I mean, the only thing that's missing from this Tribune that would make you very happy is a magazine piece on the great American himself, Elon Musk.
Yeah, all my favorite. These are a few of my favorite things.
Right.
I mean, I don't know him personally, so I don't say I hate him.
You hate the guy.
Yeah, like I said, hate's a strong word. I wouldn't wish ill on anybody, but if you want to start there, I mean, I've never been a fan of him because he's a troll incarnate. You know, he's a guy who doesn't think about the actions of what he does and what he says. And, you know, he's trying to sell this world on a pipe dream of Mars. Yeah, maybe Mars colonization would be a fun idea, but it's not this global humanitarian civilization saver that he says it is. You know, Mars is a planet that is ahead of us in its demise. All the things that people say are going to happen to our planet if the temperature changes and eventually, like, oxygen leaving our planet and our atmosphere evaporating and moist water leaving, all that stuff is in the future of this planet, albeit millions of years in the future. Mars is already there. And so why would we go to a planet that's already died, you know, and then try to revitalize it? Because come on.
All right, Mr. Eeyore, think of all the things that can happen when you have a great expedition. So, like, let's go to Mars. As we go to Mars, all the scientific discoveries things we'll figure out and discover, technology, everything.
None of that's true, John, because we've already gone to Mars. We already have, there's like 20-some rovers on Mars currently operating from various countries. Getting to Mars is not an amazing task. The idea of going and taking people to Mars, the only real thing that you're going to have to come up with that's going to be new technology, because we have a space station where we can get to zero gravity and we can test a test bed for all sorts of zero gravity, because that's the benefit here. When you get into space, the idea of having zero gravity reduces the amount of vectors and gives you the ability to test things in a perfect setting almost, even though there's still gravity in space, at least at that range from the planet. You're not getting anything. The one thing that they can come up with that'll be interesting, that if they could do it, is radiation protection, because that's the big threshold that they have to overcome. Right now, there's
radiation poisoning. If we go to Mars, people will die of radiation poisoning.
Exactly. It's a one-way trip. There's no way around it. That right now, there's nothing that's light enough and can protect someone enough to go beyond our, you know, the magnetic protection of our planet without getting just eaten alive by radiation. But that's neither here nor there. There's so many more things, earthbound ways. All of it is it's an ego thing to him. He wants to be the guy, you know, he wants to be, you know, the modern day Christopher Columbus, and that's fine. And then, you know, more power to him. It's a mostly, and I'm putting air quotes here, mostly private endeavor. I mean, he does take millions, if not billions of dollars from the taxpayer dollars from us, the US people, Mr. I want to cut the budget. But that's, you know, that's why I don't like him. I don't, he's much in the way Obama sold the world in 2008 and beyond on the green energy needs, and that were just an open checkbook to friends and colleagues. It's the same type of idea where if I can sell enough people on this big thing and it makes sort of sense, then I can make tons of money off and become the world's richest person.
He's losing money. He's trying to save America.
No, he's not losing money, John. Come on.
Why don't you go? Are you on the edge to give comfort to people who would attack a Tesla now? Come on, Jeff.
You're conflating things. You're talking about lunatics who don't understand reality. I'm talking about reality as reality. Reality is Elon Musk is making more money just because his Tesla stock tanks. He's still the richest person in the world by far. So no woe is me for Elon Musk losing money. He's in the market. Most of his assets are tied up in the market. Markets go up and down. He's going to be fine. The idea that he just signed a new, it cut $6 billion for money, the programs in NASA that would be designed to developing technologies on the space station, or developing technologies on Earth, or giving grants to schools to develop technology where all our best and brightest are supposed to be pushing U.S. forward. He's part of an administration that cut $6 billion. Meanwhile, this new tax bill going through is going to give him $1 billion to go to Mars. Again, why? There's no reason for it. You know, the idea that we're going to solve the world's problems by a private company who has yet to make a rocket launch successfully up and down and land. I mean, come on, it's you're picking and choosing what you like about the guy. The reality is he's a rich guy.
As you are, my friend.
No, I'm telling you the facts. He's doing
You're giving the facts. What I give is selective. Yes.
No, you're telling me what other people are doing against him, and that somehow that's my fault, and how somehow I'm the bad guy because other people are spray painting Teslas. I'm telling you, the guy is selling people a bill of goods that doesn't have. He's overselling it so he can become the world's richest person, which has been one of his goals since he was a kid. So this idea that we're putting blinders on to say, well, he's gonna come up with all these great technologies that he's gonna then sell to people and make. I mean, it's not gonna benefit anybody. It's not a private. Public partnership. It's a private partnership that is getting public money. And so I don't like what the guy stands for the same way I don't like what Obama stood for when he was saying, giving us this BS about, oh, the world's going to end in 10 years.
There's a lot of good about Obama. Okay.
And I'm sure there's nice things about him, Elon too, but
you've known me for decades.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, one thing about me, I look at the world to see the beauty of it, to see the happiness. Get a little optimistic. Drive the Eeyore out of you, okay?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Can you please do that a little bit? Let the sun shine in, my friend.
I wish, John. Sometimes it's tough. You're right. I mean, there is beauty in the world. I love my plants, and my garden is nice.
What's going on in the garden?
You know, it's been too cold to get anything really cranking.
I know, right?
But it's been all right. You know, get some tomatoes going, get peppers going, get my wildflowers are going. I planted a bunch of carrots and beets, some fancy red dragon beets I'm excited about.
What are those?
It's like really vibrant red beets with like red stalks, and they're a little bit sweeter than traditional beets, so they're really nice with a little bit of a little bit of butter and salt.
There's nothing like beets and garlic. Can I say?
Yeah.
Beets and garlic. Beets and scordoya, which is a garlic paste, is my favorite appetizer.
I love it. I've had your wife's made some for us on occasion. It's been delicious. Speaking of which, John, there is some happiness. You and Betty have celebrated quite the milestone in this past weekend.
Yeah, we had our 39th wedding anniversary. We drove downtown Saturday. You know, people think I avoid the city. Well, I kind of hate it, but I love it too. I guess I'm like you with you and Elon Musk. I see the beauty of it, and I long for it, and I love it like an old girlfriend. But I'm with my wife.
She's all yours, your girlfriend.
She's all mine. My girlfriend. I love her. 39 years. So last time we went downtown, we had a terrible experience. I was at a hotel, and there was no hot water in the shower, and there was no room service. You know, like I wanted a tray brought to the room, like wheeled with a big pot of coffee and continental breakfast. No, they didn't do that. But this one, they didn't have hot water. That was the mm-hmm. Palmer House, which, you know, I couldn't believe it. Palmer House was that had wow. fallen so
everybody
low.
Had a bad
but
day.
But this John, one huh? is the this one is the Pier. I mean the sure. Peninsula Hotel, and the Peninsula Hotel on Rush and Superior is, to me, the great hotel, great staff, great, like a lot of people working there. And so you don't have to look around for people to help you. And they're all attentive. We had a great evening there. We went to a Dan Proft recommended restaurant, French restaurant, you know me, French food. Le Nomad. I mean, two best restaurants in the city are Carrie Nahabedian's Rondi and Le Nomad's. And this was just insanely good. I mean, Betty makes wild mushroom soup, and it was on the menu. She didn't want to order it because she thought, if I order it, I'll never be able to approach this, and I'll never make a mushroom soup again. But she had it, and the flavor explosions were amazing.
Now I love it.
You understand pastries. The pastry chef is just so good. And we had a souffle. Oh,
French pastry. I couldn't hold a candle to most French pastries. Their delicacy is incredible, but yes.
We had a souffle Grand Marnier, and they gave us some chocolates as well. It was just so, and a cheese course with fruit and duck l'orange.
Oh, my wife's favorite.
Yeah, we went on and on. And it was just so good, and the service was impeccable. Josie, our server, impeccable knowledge of what to pair wine with. And
I love it. I love it. And I'm sure it was, knowing Dan Proft, it must have been top-notch.
We've gone through a lot, and I felt like celebrating with my honey, right?
I love it. Deservedly so.
She's been through a lot, as you've been through, you know, health scares with your daddy, with me.
Yeah.
So anyway, I just wanted her to be happy. So we did.
Yeah.
You know what? On the way down, I looked at CWB Chicago, and there was a story that I thought of you, because 14 or 15 people were being sought in the brutal beating and robbery of a young couple.
Yeah.
On the Red Line. And I saw those pictures, and you know, they have the photographs of them. They put it on CWB. I didn't see that in the Chicago Tribune or in the Sun-Times. Why is that? We have the photographs of the assailants being sought by police, and they're not in the newspapers. What's going
John,
on?
Well, but John, you know, they held themselves to a higher editorial standard, apparently. You know, that if you're only accused and not convicted of a crime, they don't want to, you know, make it seem like you're a criminal, even though I believe a couple of these people were out on parole.
So I think it's more than a couple.
Yeah, it's right. I mean, it's to say, we could ask the same question as to, if we want to drag Obama back into it, why was everyone cheering Obama being elected and ignoring the fact that it was, you know, we'd always back to Blago, this whole seat. Not that he was directly involved with it, but you know, if Blago went down for this, why was Obama not taken down? The whole idea of the Resco House. I mean, you guys had that, didn't you?
Well, we had the Tribune had the story of the Resco deal, you know, Obama's help, getting help to buy the dream house.
Right. Give people who are younger than us, John, the rundown.
The story was that Tony Resco, a Weasley bagman of Obama's, helped him buy his dream house in a nefarious tax scheme, like pulling back funds, etc. It was really kind of tricky.
Not as bad as taking the toilets out, but
no, not as bad as Pritzker's, right? But we elevated him to demigod status. And at the same time, the Chicago Tribune, which broke the story, David Jackson is a good reporter. David Jackson and Gary Marks, good reporters, really good reporters.
Yeah, Gary Marks has some great stories.
And anyway, so we played that story on the Chicagoland section, not on the front page. Can you imagine? The candidate is from Chicago. The Chicago Tribune breaks the story, and it's not put out there. But you know what? We buried it. And at the same time, the press corps became enamored with the drug called hopium. You know about hopium? Oh, like you smoke it. It's like you smoke it in bongs or something. You smoke it in pipes.
Yeah.
And I found a picture of some hopium smoker, and I put it in a column for Sunday, where they were like lying down. There's an Asian man helping them light their pipes, and they're lying down. They have their suits and ties still on, and they're lying down and they're having their opium. Amazing.
Yes, and it's not a dig at anybody of Asian descent. It's just a nod to history where, you know,
yes,
there was Asian immigrants were pushed out of mainstream society and unfortunately had to make their livings running illicit society, which often included drugs.
There's no ethnic disparaging on my part.
Right. No, that's why I just want to clear, you know, because you guys are people who hate listening to us, John. I just want to make sure that they take us up out of context.
I'm sure they do. I'm sure even Eric would not twist that.
I don't know.
You never know. But if they do, then I'll have something for them, because I'm not about hurting anybody's, attacking or mocking anybody's ethnicity. I do have to say, Brandon Johnson's thing.
Oh, yeah.
I have to bring that up.
Sure.
I hired, what does he say? He hired a black woman, a black guy, everything. Everyone's black.
Right. The setting is he's at a predominantly black church, which
that's where you can do whatever you want.
Well, I don't know about that, but he was pandering to his audience and touting that he had all these high ranking people in his administration who were black, and that it was a big deal, and that he was very proud of that. And, you know, of course, Trump's White House, who's looking for any reason to come after him because he's less than amiable to their policies. Yeah, so, well, wait a minute. If you're just hiring black people just because they're black, that's not the right thing to do. That's kind of racism. You know, we don't do that in this country. It's called
the 1964. I looked it up like a real journalist. The Civil Rights Act.
Right.
You can't hire people based on their race.
Right. It can't be the deciding factor.
But he's talking as if it was.
Right. Exactly. I mean, and it's just at its worst, he's actively being racist. At its best is that he's just stupid enough to say something like that, that clearly sounds like you're flaunting that law. And it's a meritocracy, right? It should be the best of the best. And God knows the city needs the best of the best.
Those people that are experts, I saw some journalists who are experts.
Air quotes around experts, John?
Well, experts in racial politics, right?
So definitely air quotes around the word experts.
Well, that's they cast themselves as experts. Right. You know, I remember in the, and I'm going to have something to say on that later in the week. I can't wait. I have something
looking forward to it.
Good for you. But pointing out that I'm hiring people I'm the mayor, and I'm hiring people based on their race is illegal.
Right.
But you know what? He's got 6% approval rating now, but I think that's going to help him win the Democrat, or there's no primary, but it'll get him in the runoff, because people are so stupid that they'd want to have a guy who suffers from panic attacks, is a complete moron, is not. I just wonder if he'll even get the Mutsa of the Month, or is it going to be Jake Tapper who's going to win?
Yeah, I think if you're following the unelected, not giving it to elected officials just to play nice, I think Jake Tapper certainly wins it. But it's not going to go anywhere. It's going to be a big thing. But if you look at the numbers, I mean, his numbers aren't hiring practices, those numbers aren't off. So if he could easily say, well, we were hiring to bring up the average to represent the city, blah, blah, blah. And there's wiggle room there for him to weasel out of any sort of legal action. But it'll certainly be an investigation, which will be interesting.
An investigation like the 51 intelligence officers who investigated?
No, this is Trump's DOJ now. So it's going to be a full throttled investigation, I'm sure. And I don't think they're going to pat around. Look, again, he's looking for any reason to come after people who disparage him. It's Trump's way. I mean, it's
wait a second. Now, everything is you're casting. It's like you attacked Elon Musk. And now you're saying that the reason why Trump may file the Department of Justice may file a lawsuit against Brandon Johnson is because Trump doesn't like Johnson's politics.
No, it's because Trump.
That's kind of like picking, like CNN saying, Republicans pounce.
No, it's not specific to Johnson. It's Trump has made it a DOJ prerogative to target anything that they feel has been pushed too far to the left. And Chicago easily stands out as one of those targets. So any reason to investigate the administration and the leadership of Chicago, the Democratic Party here, is what he's looking for.
But that undercuts the crime. That's like basically making excuses for the crime of hiring people.
But we don't know that there's a crime.
But he said it out of his mouth. He said
he was highlighting that the people in these positions were black to a group of black people. That's politics, John. That happens every day.
Now here we go. Now you're telling me what politics is. Okay, good.
I mean, we're talking about picking and choosing reality here. That's the reality. Are we going to find evidence of him saying, don't hire any white people, only hire black people? Maybe, maybe not. But the fact that they're going after him is directly related to Trump's policies and plans and what he said he was running on. So I don't know how I'm being the bad guy here. How I'm taking a shot at Trump. He's actively said this. This is what he ran for. He wants to undo things that the left has done. And what's more left than Chicago? What's more left than the organizing of the CTU? I mean, we're talking about a group that touts themselves as being socialists and little comrades. I mean, I don't understand how I'm the bad guy here, because I'm just stating the facts. The facts are,
you know what?
Trump's has targeted and is choosing to go after people who have wronged the system. I mean, if they're going to find something, they're going to find something.
Why I highlighted it. The reason I'm interested is that Trump is leading a counter-revolution, and he's going after all these things that you talked about because he's trying to. I see all this destructive Jacobin impulse throughout society, throughout culture, and he's fighting it. And I'm supportive of that. I think that the counter-revolution that Trump is waging is critically important, and we'll see.
We'll be right back.
With over three decades of serving up streetwise insight and local perspective on Page Two, the voice of John Cass has a home at johncassnews.com, a place where common sense is still served daily.
Listen up. Do you like being treated as a chumbalone, as a fool, sitting on a stool, smiling wanly at the sky?
Don't be a chum alone and subscribe at johncassnews.com.
I'm John Cass, 40 years a newspaper man in Chicago. I won't name the place, it's just the paper now.
That's the Chicago way.
But I'm asking you to join me so you can get a decent cup of common sense, at least. You're not going to get it from the media. It's time that you join the frontier of independent journalism at johncassnews.com.
Don't get caught in the parade of chumalones.
Traditional media, mainstream media like the paper, they're all in on it. They think you're stupid. You know what they think? They think you're a chumbalone.
Subscribe at johncassnews.com now for only $50 a year and become a member of the No Chumbalone Zone.
And now back to the conversation.
Okay, why are you in a bad mood?
Life changes. Everyone's life progresses and people get older and things get harder. And, we talked a little bit on it last week when we were talking to Tom Bevan, but the world we live in is just in revolution, in flux, the counter-revolution, liberal revolution, social, all this stuff is making things move fast. And people of an older generation, like my father, are seeing the world change, and it's way different than when they were kids, and way different when they were in high school and college and, living through friends getting drafted in Vietnam and all that stuff.
It's a circle game. We're getting old.
Right. And so the people are monetizing that fear in places like MSNBC, CNN, Fox News, all these is the quote hysteria, cable news. Right. They make their nut off of scaring people and buy gold before your house becomes worthless, or the Jacobins come and take it from you. I'm not trying to tease you there, John. I'm
right, just, I know.
The idea
because we all know that they will, but
well, they'll eat their own too.
Right, but, they'll eat.
And all so, right, so it depletes, it's depleted. It's made a lot of people scared, and it's not, it's deleterious to the health. And so my father is serious decline. He's got health problems, and that's not the only reason, but he has underlying health problems. And so I've had to, get him moved into a retirement place, which he should have done years ago. And it's for the best, and it's a great place. And he's on the lakefront. He's got a great view. He's close to me. So it makes me happy. And seeing him have normal interactions that aren't tied just to watching cable news has helped. And so there's great joy there in me seeing him, you know, kind of perk up and be more like, you know, my father of old. But it's, you know, I've got to come to the realization that it's a transition, and we're going to sell the family home. And it's,
all right, that's, you know, now, so you that, mentioned before, yeah, we came on, and if you don't want to talk about this, we can, you can, you're the editor here, so you can cut it. But I think you were talking about, you went to the Evanston market, farmer's market.
Yeah.
With your, and you saw your landlord there, and he was talking about, or she, I don't know. If it was
both, yeah, woman. Both, yeah, he and she, yeah, a couple, a lovely couple.
And they have a beautiful garden, and they want peonies.
Yes, they were lamenting. Yeah, they were lamenting because they've always wanted to have a nice batch of peonies growing, and they've just never had them. And we have a wonderful garden in the backyard, and just because I'm the type of person I am, I was like, oh, well, you know, we've got these wonderful peonies that I was tended to my whole life at my family home, and I, you know, I could definitely carve out some of those and bring them and plant them, you know, at the house. And it hit me, you know, that's what kind of sent me on a downer of a weekend. Just, and you know, it's Memorial Day weekend is to me kind of a somber weekend. I know people celebrate hot dogs and fireworks, but to me, I always think about,
no,
I think about all the people who, you know, died
trying to keep this republic.
Right. Yeah. You know, scared and bravely. And it's, so anyway, so it just kind of hit me, and I just haven't taken the time to process it, and I usually don't. I try to just keep myself busy with the next thing. And
have you gone back to your old house to take a spade and cut out some of the peonies in that garden?
We will. It's on the docket for this week, so
that'll be difficult for you.
Yeah, it will be. It will be, but they'll be close to me and where I live now, and there's some solace in that. And every page turns to reveal another new page, so it can't be all negative. But I tell you something that did kind of make me happy, John.
What?
The Sun Times with egg on their face.
What?
This past week.
Wait, did Neil Steinberg apologize to me for all the crap he's given me?
No.
All right, what was the egg?
It's funny. So Dan, our friend, I don't know if we're still friendly with Dan, I'm sure we are, Dan Mihalopoulos. Yes. Dan, who's a fine reporter in his own right. He's wrote the follow-up on it, but the gist of the story is that the Sun-Times print edition had an insert that was one of these media conglomerated contracts through Hearst and other content providers. And for those who don't know, you know, the local newspapers are designed where you have a smattering of local reporters who write stuff locally, and to fill out and make sure people feel like they're getting what they pay for, you sign on to partnerships with other groups, other media groups, and then you get this wider net of content to print.
Especially state-run media, which is what the Sun-Times is,
right?
Because the WBEZ directs its editorial product, right?
Chicago Public Media is the actual title of it, but yes, it's right. Their WBEZ falls under their purview.
And that's where Michalopoulos works.
Right, exactly, Sun-Times. Right. So anyway, so the point of the story is that there was this insert that had this had this summer reading list for 2025, and it was just
so great.
Oh yeah, it was great. You know, a wonderful photo, which is probably AI generated, of a woman sitting on a dock reading a paper or reading a book in the most uncomfortable way possible. Just look unnatural. But the story was full of books and titles from not for me to say, but the piece was filled with authors' names and books that don't exist. And the authors were real people.
What?
But it was filled with books that don't exist.
And wait, so a minute. Was, what? They made up names of books and titles that don't have, that weren't written.
Yeah,
and they're offering these.
Yes. Yep. So it was AI generated. So somebody at some media firm said, AI, write me a, you know, paper, write me a piece that is the summer reading list for 2025, the best books to read this summer. And it was complete nonsense. It made no sense. It didn't. It wasn't real. And so, of course, Melissa Bell, who's the CEO of Chicago Public Media, is quoted by Dan saying that she's deeply disappointed that this story distracts from the incredible journalism happening every day at our organization. It's, I mean, platitudes and nonsense.
It's got to be tough writing about your own paper.
Yeah. I'd like to believe Dan, you know, knowing, being a smart guy and seeing, you know, the world for what it is, gets a little bit of a tickle just writing stuff and being like pointing out, you know, just the foolishness of corporate media, because it's, you know, it's certainly one of the problems that we've let ourselves fall into.
I mean, that's got to be the most egregious thing I've heard. Yeah. Making up titles, that's kind of like using a quote. Think of a quote that was understood as coming from a particular writer and then not attributing that.
Yeah, so it's Marco Buscaglia. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but Buscaglia, who's supposedly a Chicago-based freelance writer, says he apologized for fact-checking what he gleaned using AI, which it doesn't read like if he just failed to fact check it. It reads like he just, you know, lazily had AI write something.
What is that? Like, was that when you Google something, is that when you're having AI write it? Like if I say Chicago Way in Google, do they write a whole piece? Like, do they remember that the Sun-Times had a finger wagging episode at John Cass? Like, you should not use AI. You should not use the Chicago Way.
Right. Because
Barack Obama is a wonderful man, John Cass.
No, not so much. But it's really more that he went to, you know, an AI writer in one of these engines and asked for a list. And, you know, AI is certainly flawed because it's not as, especially in that context, it's not as advanced as people believe it is, because it's, especially when you get into the subjects of art and production, it'll just make stuff up because it'll get confused. You say, hey, give me a list of all the books written by James Joyce, and it can give you that, but give me a list of the best books, which, you know, it's a subjective term, written by Irish authors and ones that are coming out now.
Anything, you know, by Pat Hickey or Mike Houlihan?
Yeah. I doubt they'd make the cut for AI, because AI is lilted. But it's a foolish thing, because it doesn't root itself. It doesn't have the human aspect to say, oh, well, these aren't real. Like, it can't do short-term stuff. You know, if you say, I want stuff from the last five, you know, that's happening now, it really can't figure out now, because now is really kind of it's, you know, it's time, and time is a hard concept for humans to understand, and AI won't quite get that. So it'll try to think of things that would be now or would be in the future, and it creates them out of whole cloth. Whereas if you went back and say, hey, give me all the best pieces of James Joyce, well, the internet, which is what AI uses to learn, is filled with people writing about what would be the best, you know, pieces from James Joyce, and it would be able to regurgitate that back to you. It can't really create forward-thinking stuff or in-the-moment stuff, because it doesn't work like that. There's not enough evidence there. You know, there's the stuff that's important will percolate to the top over time, and then it'll capture that. But in the short term, you know, last month, week, whatever, there's just too much stuff for it to really figure out what's real and what's not. And so that's where AI falls short, and one of the places where AI falls short. And so, it goes back to the idea, and we've talked about this how many times, John, that, you know, good editors make great papers, and there's no editor here, clearly, that let this through.
That's pathetic.
Yeah, it's really bad.
There's such nonsense in the media that you can't even make it up.
I know.
Like, there's one story, like, they're all fronting it that Pope Leo is a black man. I mean, in the Tribune and the Sun-Times, it's, like, pathetic. Because he's, like, something is one of his family trees traces back to Creole in Louisiana. It's so twisted. Everyone's twisting themselves up. Like,
it's the, you know, it's progressive Olympics. They want to have the gold star for making it progressively sound. Oh, look. Yeah. Bending over backwards.
Look, you know, something
great. If he is, that's great. Then yeah, awesome. Right. But what's it mean for and today? I mean, does he get more Pope stars? I mean, there's no Pope, you know, ranking, power rankings. I mean, let's look at the body of his work and not who, you know, his relatives were.
You nailed it with the progressive Olympics thing. It's like they twist themselves up into knots, you know?
Mm-hmm. They want a gold star and a participation trophy.
Right. Anyway, yeah. We have, I guess, new revelations are coming out about Mr. Biden and his merry band.
Oh, yeah.
Will that story ever stop? I don't think so. Will it continue? Yes, I think so. What do you?
I hope so. I hope so. I think Bevin nailed it, and you've followed it up with the idea that it's, you know, if Watergate was a scandal, which surely it was questionable politics, sure, at best.
It was a scandal, clearly.
Right. But I'm just, you know, I'm devil's advocate, yeah. Both sides, right? And then you have to believe that this should be of, you know, obliterating proportions to that scandal, because people knew what they were doing. They knew who he was. They knew, you know, they knew that the president, they were hiding and actively hiding it.
I think in this one, in the Watergate, as I said Sunday, Watergate, the press uncovered the scandal.
Right.
In this one, the corporate legacy media, CNN, MSNBC, ABC, CBS, NBC, New York Times, Washington Post, and Jake the Fake Tapper. But the question mark is, do we get tired? Do we submit to our subjugation by the deep state, or do we fight? And if we fight, do we sing protest songs like "Which Side Are You On," like from Kentucky Coal Miners, or do we do something else?
I just hope. I mean, we don't know. We just talked about this with Bevin. I don't know what happens. I don't know how we. I mean, I will say that positive news, John. Guys like my dad, who have been plagued by corporate and cable news, have turned on guys like Tapper and have turned off CNN because he's realizes that it was all a charade to sell books.
The problem is that the American people, like people like your dad, were put through so much anxiety for what? Instead of being told the truth, it was all lies. And then they were like, he's lying. You know, I'm sure you've had discussions with your father and with other people like that who've tried to defend, like, they're coming after us to attack us, to tell us that what we believe about Biden is not true. And that wears at them. That has a cost.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the cost is, you know, people are getting sick. People are getting, you know, hurt.
Yeah.
And people are losing, most importantly, confidence in the institutions that hold this great experiment together.
Yeah. And you know what? I just worry. I know we're going to wrap, but as we close, I just think of people like raving about all this, like Scott Pelley. Did you see that?
Oh my God. I know. Commencement speeches. What a, talk about being, you know, falling into the trap of Eeyore. You know, if you're going to be a commencement speech, just make it positive. Don't rail against your political enemies just because you're.
But Scott Pelley, you're 60 Minutes, man. What are you doing? You're screaming like you're screaming your head, and you have both arms, finger pointing, both hands waving in the air. My God.
Read the room.
Read the room is not reading the room of your falling ratings.
Well, that's what I mean. Read the room. Yeah, journalists are not the ones who should be shouting from the rooftops about.
Look, journalism is dead. Journalism is dead. I've said it before. You've said it before.
So I don't find too many people who work in cable news, quote, journalists. There are very few these days.
And on that note, can we just go for a nice, I don't know, summer of love? Can we have just a summer of love? The peonies will grow in Jeff's new backyard garden. My tomatoes are up, and I see the cucumbers in the garden that I planted. It's like the two arms of the cucumbers have arms like sticking up in the sky, reaching for the lattice that I put there, the fencing. And it's going to be a beautiful time. And I just hope people don't get killed as a result.
Yeah.
Thanks for being here, Jeff Carlin.
Thanks for having me, John.
And I want to apologize for starting off with the Eeyore thing, because you're not Eeyore, but I'm just trying to tease you and get you going.
I know. But, and it worked. Hey, you did it.
For Jeff Carlin, executive producer, WGN Radio, my friend, future physics teacher, baker of pie, friends of cats, and for me, John Cass, editor of John Cass News, working on a good piece you might like about media in Chicago. And maybe Jeff will like it too. Thanks for joining us for another edition of the Chicago Way podcast, and see you again next time on WGN Plus.